The Iceman was a very unique individual that I wrote a book about. HBO did three 60-minute documentaries on this fellow over a 10-year period. He was so unusual. He was so different. He was so scary. He was basically a nightmare come true. I saw the last of the three documentaries that HBO did called The Iceman and the Psychiatrist. I'm sure a lot of you listeners out there saw it also. When I saw it, I thought to myself, I got to meet this guy. I wrote him a letter. I ended up hearing from his family. I ultimately met with him. And about 3 years later, I came up with a book which we call The Iceman, Confessions of a Mafia Contract Killer. And basically, what made him so unique was, while he was killing people for a living, over 200 people over a 40-some-odd-year career, for want of a better way to put it, he was a family man. He was a devoted family man. Loved his wife, loved his children. His kids went to parochial school. All the neighbors thought he was the nicest guy. In the summer times, there were always barbecues and pool parties. And he had this wonderful, jovial exterior, when in reality, he was
a monster.
He was a monster. He was hiding. He guised himself in the cloak of being just the nice next-door neighbor, when in fact he was highly motivated, very cunning, contract killer. He'd go off to work, kiss his wife goodbye, kiss the kids goodbye, have a nice day, dear, and he'd go kill people and come back. And
did the wife have any inkling what was going on?
No, absolutely. She had no idea he was killing people for a living.
What did she think he did, Philip?
She believed that essentially he had an import and export company, then he had several different companies, that he's often out of the country committing murders, but she didn't know that.
She thought
he was dealing in different metals, different currencies, and he was the type of man that you couldn't question him. He was very big, 6'5", nearly actually 6'6". When I met him, he was 320 pounds. And he was monstrous. What was so unusual about him, George, though, he had this athletic, he was almost like a professional athlete. He walked like a cat. He moved like a cat. One of his daughters first told me that he would suddenly disappear out of nowhere. You'd look over there and there'd be a tree, and then suddenly he'd be standing next to the tree,
yeah,
just looking around the tree. She'd be at a Sweet 16 party dancing with her friends, and all of a sudden he'd be in a corner. Where does he appear? How did he get there? She never knew. Both his daughters told me this about him. And then I thought to myself, this might connect into what he did for a living. And I asked him about it, i.e., did you ever practice moving with stealth and moving in such a way where people didn't see you? He said he did. He devoted hours and hours and hours to blending in, to becoming part of the backdrop, to not standing out. And I found this very interesting and very fascinating, because this harked back to what serial killers try to do also. Not only try to do, what they do, they blend into the background. We can use as a good example for your listeners the BTK killer, who for over 30 years terrorized the whole community, and no one knew it was him. I mean, he looked like Mr. Magoo. You'd never in a million years think he was capable of the atrocious, sadistic, sexual torture he inflicted upon whole families. When he was arrested, everyone was shocked. It stirred up the community, and they all looked at them, one another, thinking, oh, my God, if he's capable of that, what is that guy down the block who drinks or who did this or did that? Was he
the one they really think is a killer?
Yes, yeah. And so Kuklinski mastered that element, and he used it in stalking people. He told me that there was never a murder, that a contract that he didn't fill. Some contracts took weeks to fill. other ones took days. Sometimes he shot people to death in garages, in streets, in hallways, in alleyways. Other times he abducted them and took them to secluded places for the one purpose of torturing them. Not for his personal liking, but that was part of the job. This book was, an amazing tale, George, because it so has to do with what I always wanted to write about, which is, i.e., how a severely abused child can grow into a monster.
And he was, I guess. What happened to him, too, huh?
Well, you know, it's not an excuse. I know there's people listening now that are rolling their eyes and saying, oh, you know, here's another sad sob story, and it's a bunch of baloney, and nobody has any right to do the kinds of things he did. And I agree and subscribe to all that. But the truth of the matter is, when you hear what happened, you think to yourself, this has to factor in, at the very least. If it's not a cause and effect, it's certainly a fact. And basically, the long and the short of it was, his father was a brutal, sadistic alcoholic. He got drunk every weekend, and when he got drunk, he beat up his two sons. Richard was 4 years old when he saw his seven-year-old brother beat to death by the father. The boy's name is Florian. They laid him out in the home. Their family got away with the killing. The father threatened the wife. He said, "You say anything, I'll break your back." She kept her mouth shut. They said basically the child fell down a flight of stairs. And ultimately, there was nobody checking up on it back then. It was in the 1930s.
Right.
And he got away with the murder. He let up on Richard for a while, but went back to beating the boy. Richard told me by the time he was 10 years old, he urinated in his pants at just the sound of his father's voice. Now, mind you, I'm a street guy. I'm not an easy person to fool. He wasn't offering any of this up as an excuse. He didn't give a flying F what anyone thought about what he did or who he was or anything like that. He was telling me this, what I'm relating now, reluctantly, and he didn't like talking about it. I cajoled it out of him because I was looking for the building blocks, and there they were in living color. Ultimately, by the time he was 10 years old, he hated the world and everybody in it, and he turned his anger on animals, tortured dogs and cats, and, mm-hmm. and threw them down incinerators and did the most horrible, unspeakable things. Things you would not think a child could even think about, let alone do, execute.
Well, would you call him a contract killer or a serial killer? I mean,
well,
did he start off as a serial killer?
Basically, no. He's not a serial killer. He is a classic a contract killer. A serial killers are, according to the FBI, the individuals that have what they call a bloodlust, i.e., the ones that get sexually aroused, turned on by the hunt, the capture, the actual murder.
All right, but it sounds like, Philip, he could have become a serial killer.
Well, he was a serial killer in the sense that he killed in a series of murders, but they were more coincidental to one another than him actually having the goal of arousal. If he had if there was any factor that he felt with regard to murder, it was that it gave him a feeling of omnipotence, a feeling of power.